Wonder Kids in Strip Clubs, Mikel Arteta's tribute to North London brothels, and chairmen gobbing in fans' faces. This is Extra Shot, the weekly pod spilling the funniest stories in sport. I am Jack Rivlin. Zach Sweeney Lynch is here too.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, mate. Happy birthday. It's Zach's big 30th, so I hope all our listeners will get in touch with him.
Thank you. By the time you listen to this, it will no longer be my birthday, but despite that, thank
you'll just be another depressed 30-something with back pain.
Yeah, my knee is hurting a little bit.
Is it?
So, yeah,
it's timely.
It's a slippery slope from here, I think.
Yeah. Have you had a nice birthday week? It's International Break Week. It's good of them to put that on for you.
Yeah, no, that's it always seems to coincide, actually, with my birthday, International Week, which is nice, I guess.
Yeah, why not have San Marino play? Oh, how did San Marino do, actually? Did you check?
They lost the first one. They lost 3-1. They actually took the lead in that, but I think they were only in the lead for about 6 minutes. And then they drew the second one 0-0.
0-0. Against St Kitts and Nevis.
St Kitts and Nevis, yeah.
Right, so does that count as a good return?
I mean,
these are friendlies, yeah?
Yeah, considering, well, the 20-year wait for a win goes on. But right.
When was the last goal? They get goals periodically, don't they?
Yeah, they did. I think I saw some stat that in the last 20 years, they've only led matches for about 21 minutes or something. So they've added another 9 minutes to that.
That's fantastic. Nearly 50% increase.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, what about the No Taxico, the Virgin Islands?
The first leg they drew, it was a late equaliser from the British Virgin Islands.
Fantastic.
And then the second leg was last night. And George, can you check?
So it was 0-0 at extra time, went to penalties, and BVI won it 4-2.
Excellent.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Shove that up your ass, the US Virgin Islands. You tax-dodging bastards.
Yeah.
Right, well, thank God the international break is over.
Yep.
And happy birthday, Zach. Now, before we begin, some listeners may recall our live show on the 12th of June sold out in a record 36 hours. Well, by popular demand, we have added a second date on Saturday, the 15th of June. So this is your opportunity to come and see me, Zach, and our special guests live in the flesh. We'll be previewing the biggest wrong-uns playing in this year's Euros, and we'll spill a few stories too salacious for the pod. So come check it out. It'll be a lot of fun.
Please do come, because we've added a second date now, and that would be embarrassing if we don't sell out.
Although George has just checked and we've already sold half the tickets for this one.
Oh,
so
yeah,
get them while they're hot, because there's very few left already. And that isn't a lie to induce you to make a purchase. Please enter your card details. Anyway, if you want to come and see us, it's in London, Saturday the 15th of June. It's at 2 o'clock-ish.
Matinee.
So it's a sort of matinee performance. And then we'll stick around after. It's Spain v Croatia, the biggie. So we can all watch that together and, you know, revel in various horrific stories that we've shared with you. We'll have a few surprises as well, I'm sure. The link to buy tickets is in the description for this podcast in the show notes. Click on that, buy your ticket, see ya there. Right, well, I think we're all delighted the international break is finally over, but one person who will be missing it is Chelsea's 16-year-old wonder kid, Kendry Páez. So Kendry got called up by Ecuador for a couple of friendlies against Guatemala and Italy, and the games were played in New Jersey, so right next to New York. Slightly random, but
this is a big Italian community there.
Yeah, and
a big Latin American.
Yeah, a lot
as well.
Of Latin and Central Americans there, I would say. Anyway, they beat Guatemala on Thursday night 2-0, and the next day the players were given 2 p.m. till 8 p.m. as free time to go and do what they want. And you know, there's a few culture vultures in the side. You got Chelsea's Moses Caicedo in there. And the manager was probably hoping that they'd, you know, maybe go check out the Guggenheim, or, you know, is it a ferry to the Statue of Liberty? Instead, the senior players dragged Kendry Páez down to a strip club in downtown Manhattan.
Between 2 and 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Just an afternoon strip club.
Yeah, middle of the day. So they all sort of like went out for lunch. It looked quite boozy. There are clips of it. I'll put a link in the show notes. And then some of the players dragged Páez down to, this slightly grotty looking strip club.
Is he not 16 as well?
He is 16, yeah. I mean, you can't drink till you're 21, but I think 18 maybe to get in. Either way, underage, but they snuck him in. And you know, that's probably when the manager got him together with the senior players. He was probably hoping he'd learn a thing or two. So why not teach him about life?
They do grow up quickly. footballers, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And Kendry certainly has now after what he saw. So the video, it shows Robert Arboleda, his teammate, like grinding on strippers and he's got like a stack of dollar bills and he's just like chucking it on their asses. I think it's known as making it rain. I think that is the technical term.
It's the dictionary definition.
Yeah, yeah. And it is weirdly like a bit of a tradition in America, like among sportsmen, that like you often see videos of them in strip clubs and they'll have strippers like twerking and then they'll be like throwing banknotes. So there's that guy in the NBA, Ja Morant, who's the sort of bad boy of the NBA at the moment. And last year this picture came up. He'd rented a VIP room at a strip club and he had these strippers in there twerking away and he'd covered literally every surface, the floor, the sofa, the tables with dollar bills. Like someone had clearly painstakingly gone around and laid out all these dollar bills. So I guess it's all, you know, kind of tradition.
Yeah, I don't know. That made me laugh because they were just $1 bills. Like there's probably about $3,000 there or something.
Yeah,
together, which like he's giving the impression that it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
I mean $3,000 is also a lot, but
still, it's like what's the brag here? You earn that in like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah. Floyd Mayweather, the retired boxer who claims to be a billionaire but definitely isn't. You know, he often poses with money and he's like, this is $1 million. Apparently the trick he does there is he gets stacks of ones and then just has $100 bill on top of each stack to pretend like he has.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
He's definitely not got as much money as he says. Do you remember last year he was doing a guest cameo at a roller disco in White City?
Yeah. It's Bush. Yeah. Also, he sells cameos for 27 quid. So you're obviously not a billionaire.
Yeah.
There's more on that as well. We should do another bit on Floyd Mayweather at some point. Anyway, back in the Ecuador camp, the Federation have gone mad about this strip club visit. They're really pissed off, which, I mean, I don't think anyone's broken any rules technically.
Yeah, well, he is underage, no?
Well, okay, yeah, that one. So I think specifically they are
broken some local laws, some local customs.
Yeah. And I guess they've led little Kendry astray. Robert Arboleda, the one who's in the video throwing the notes over the strippers, he has come out defiantly. So after the Federation said that they might ban some of these players, they've condemned them. And Arboleda just tweeted, "From now on my free days, I will just start reading the Bible because one can't even have fun. Ooh, I promise." Absolute teenager sent to his room energy. Oh, I'll just read the Bible instead.
That reminds me of Pato's first day at AC Milan when he came into the dressing room and I can't remember if it was Ronaldinho or Ronaldo came up to him with a copy of Playboy and was like, okay, you're either with us or you're with Kaká and the God Squad. And he looked over to the other side of the dressing room and there's Kaká hanging up like prayer beads and his like portrait of the Virgin Mary.
He made his choice. Yeah. Isn't in the quote of the story, doesn't he describe it as Kaká had all these Bible things?
Yeah. I think it was church stuff.
Yeah, church stuff. You know, church shit. Anyway, I don't know what will happen to Arboleda. We'll keep you posted. But you think, like, the World Cup's coming up in America. You think they'd want to sample a bit of American culture? And what more American than a strip club?
Strip club at 2 in the afternoon.
A titty bar, I think they're known as, in daytime hours, I think. Another stripper story. I think you wrote it for the newsletter last year. There was that rapper, and at an NBA game, he rented a hospitality suite, whatever they're called. And he was like on the balcony bit where you watch the game so everyone could see him. And he just like, a stripper twerked on him for a bit. He like showered her with dollar bills and then he got down on one knee and proposed to his girlfriend. Who was just at the side watching.
And she said yes.
She said yes.
So just like every little girl dreams it. Just after my boyfriend has finished raining dollar bills down on strippers.
I always wonder where it'll be.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully Kendry Pyers hasn't got too many ideas from that, but yeah, excited to see what happens to him next.
Yeah.
Now, there is a genuinely massive game on Sunday. It's Man City v Arsenal, a potential title decider. And the Gunners are top of the league. And Mikel Arteta says the atmosphere at the Emirates is the best he's ever seen it. Obviously, he's a club legend, so he would know. And key to that atmosphere is Arsenal's relatively new adopted anthem, North London Forever, by Louis Dunford. You've heard the song before
I
games.
I have heard parts of it, yeah.
Yeah, you hear it sometimes when you're watching on TV before the games. But have you listened to the full song?
No, I don't think so.
It evokes sort of sentimental images of a North London that is gradually disappearing from view. It's quite beautiful. Here's a bit.
As I walk these streets alone, through this borough I call home, upon the barren fields of ivory, neath the stadiums of stone, through the turnstiles at the Angel, see the homeless on the green, from the Cali to the cross, and every shithole in between. Past the church, the mosque, a crack den, and the offie on the corner, see the brasses from the brothel that pretends to be a sauna. Watch the bedlam in the bookies, see the winners and the losers seeking solace from their sorrow in the local battle cruisers. Through the madness in the market, weathered faces turn to greet ya. Hello, governor, how's your mother? You're right, son, be lucky, geezer. Double pie and mash and liquor, a couple of rosy Leop chap, or watch retired gangsters bicker every day in half his calf. The little fuckers causing trouble for the causes make you smile. You meet your muckers for a couple, forget your troubles for a while. From the full nil to the Hemi, all the faces are the same, 'cause the manner might be changing, but the people still remain.
I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, it is.
Genuinely, it's good.
Do they blast out the whole song?
I don't know.
Lyrics included at the Emirates.
Does Mikel Arteta know about the brothels on the corner? The crackheads from the sauna.
I like to think that he collaborated on those lyrics.
Yeah. Does Mikel Arteta know what a brass is? I feel like that's not the Islington that Mikel Arteta knows. But it is a real Islington. So actually, after listening to the song, I went down a bit of a Louis Dunford rabbit hole online. So his mum, did you know, is Linda Robson, who you're probably too young to remember Birds of a Feather, Zach, but she was the star of that. And she's now a mainstay on the Loose Women sofa.
Of course.
So you probably remember her from that, from your days wanking to daytime TV on the sofa.
Back in my 20s.
Back in the glory days. But North London Forever is not my favourite Louis Dunford track. That accolade belongs to Regretamin, which is a track about trying to do some coke and accidentally snorting some ketamine. Take it away,
Lou.
Remember
that from my 20s as
well. On a night out in a squat rave with my mates when we were young, we were all pinging on the jellies or rubbing powder on our gums. Next to geezers having seizures, we cut shapes beneath the lights. The DJ's blaring anthems, we ain't going home tonight. As creatures stagger past me, gurning, staring into space, I have a breather in the car seat, my ears are buzzing from the bass. When a friend of mine racks up a line and says, bruv, this gear's insane. So with the rolled up score off his iPhone 9, I sniff the line away. Well, it hits me like a rocket, I said, oh, I can't feel me tongue. And that gear is double powerful, my face is going numb. But every word of speech was slurred, and as my legs began to sway, he said, that weren't a line of bugle, bro, that was a line of cake. So the first time I took ketamine, I thought it was cocaine. I was in all right, 2 in 8, all on my own. And the K-hole was calling out my name.
He sings with the earnestness of, like, as if he's sort of pining for an ex-lover. Yeah.
It's about doing cat by accident. The comments as well underneath are amazing. They're like, mate, I'm all the way in Australia, but I totally fucking know what you mean. People being like, bruv, you said it. So, hopefully, if Arsenal do win the title, Mikel Arteta can stick that one on at the end.
Yeah, go for a line with Louis.
Oh, God, that's funny. That's really tickling.
Also, is the Louis Dunford thing all part of Arteta's, like, building community around the club thing? Like, the fact that he bought the team a Labrador?
Oh, the win.
Yeah, he bought Arsenal a Labrador and called it win. Which is, you know, inventive.
Yeah. He's bringing the club closer to the fans, to people's real home life experiences.
Yeah,
right?
The real Islington.
Having your dogs, taking your dog for a walk, and your line of gear with your mates, and it turns out to be K. Okay. Chat changing the tone slightly from that. Did you see this weekend Sven-Göran Eriksson was managing a Liverpool Legends match at Anfield? They played against Ajax 1-4-2 with like Gerrard was in the team, Torres as well. It's quite a kind of sad side to that, which is that Sven has obviously had this terminal cancer diagnosis recently, and he's always dreamed of managing Liverpool, and they decided to give him this game as a sort of gesture of their goodwill. And in the build-up to the game, Channel 4 got some of his old England players to record messages for him. So it was like Joe Cole did a really, really nice one talking about some memories of playing for Sven. Owen Hargreaves as well was really, really touching tribute. And then next up was Michael Owen, who delivered not quite such a heartfelt tribute.
I hope this finds you in good spirits. I hope you're keeping fine. And I hope you're enjoying the current England team, who are doing so well. And of course, we're all looking forward to the European Championships in the summer. Take care, boss, and all the very best to you.
I saw someone comment under the video, just, I hear you used to manage England. Good stuff.
It sounds like he's recording a birthday message for a stranger on Cameo. Yeah. Not a message to the terminally ill manager who helped fulfill his career dreams by taking him to three international tournaments.
Yeah, he knows Sven.
Yeah. It's always like when he's coming, he's like halfway through that, you think he's about to take a turn and he's going to say something really touching. And then it's just like, well, anyway, hope you're well.
It's like, when will the message to Sven start?
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't expect anything less from a guy who's never tasted tea or coffee and only watched seven films, though. Mm. It was delivered in exactly the same tone as that Dubai tourism advert. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Now, let's go see where I own my apartments. My favourite place, Dubai Sports City. I'm throwing on the afterburners, so hold on.
He's a robot.
Yeah. He's not the guy to deliver your heartfelt message. Both content and delivery is just 0 out of 10.
It just seems to say every line with the same sort of monotone delivery. There's no emotion there.
Well, I mean, as we've discussed before, his sexting scandal, which, like, even in the context of asking for naked photos, he still managed to sound just like an emotionless robot.
Yeah.
Come on then, fire them through. It's a long, busy journey to London and I haven't got much to do.
Yeah.
Tremendous, by the way. There's an arrogance to Michael Owen as well that does just make it a little bit funnier as well. Now, Zach, do you remember Luis Rubiales?
I do.
The disgraced Spanish FA chief. He's the one, for listeners who don't remember, he's the one who did that forced kiss on Jenny Hermoso, the Spanish player. After Spain won the Women's World Cup, he forced a kiss on her and it kicked off this huge scandal. He lost his job for that after hanging in there for a while, and he's actually being prosecuted for it. So I'd assumed that his downfall was complete, but there's more. He's now also being accused of corruption. So the allegation from the Spanish police is that Rubiales took backhanders from Saudi Arabia in order to move the Spanish Super Cup to Saudi, which it's now played there, bizarrely. And the main evidence is this leaked phone conversation between Rubiales and Gerard Piqué, the old Barca defender, who somehow got himself involved in this.
Yeah.
He does. Piqué gets involved in like weird,
he pops up all over
sport
the
admin stuff. Yeah. Anyway, on the call, the pair discuss millions of euros in commissions. And apparently this is the key sticking point. Was this a backhander? Last week, the Spanish police raided the FA headquarters, and one of the coppers emerged from the Spanish FA HQ with this cardboard box, and on the side it just said Luis Rubiales in massive letters. I feel like they might have done
slightly staged.
Yeah, they might have done that for the cameras. He wasn't arrested, but they have confirmed that they're investigating him. So it looks like he's going to have to fight another legal battle. Fortunately, he has his secret weapon, his mother. So you might recall that Rubiales' 72-year-old mother locked herself in a church and went on a hunger strike after the whole forced kiss scandal. She said that she was protesting the inhumane, bloodthirsty witch hunt against my son. And she lasted a couple of days, and then she said she felt dizzy and went to hospital, which probably could have seen that coming.
Yeah, I mean, that was just such a mad episode. That was a crazy twist to it as well, because he was just, I don't know why he could not see the writing on the wall and just like go steely jawed into the night with some dignity attacked and apologize for what he'd done. He's obviously fucked up, but wheeling out your mum to do a hunger strike is just.
So I don't know what
he's get the dog to self-immolate on the steps of the church.
He's going to need something just to distract. And actually, if these allegations are true, it wouldn't be the first time that Rubiales has been accused of misusing FA funds. So when the Kissgate scandal broke last year, Rubiales' uncle, who was his former chief of staff as well, accused him of using Federation money to host Berlusconi-style orgies. So apparently he would rent a villa near Granada in southern Spain, and he'd have 8 to 10 girls there and then a load of FA blazers, and they'd have like a private sex party, all expenses paid by the FA. I should say he denies this allegation, and he also denies taking backhanders from Saudi. But anyway, yeah, it just keeps on running for him. It's amazing how there's one incident that just caused like scandal after scandal.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, surely when that first thing had kicked off, if he'd just put his hands up and said, "I'm really sorry, that was completely out of order," and just resigned, then everybody would have kind of forgotten about the incident, and he could have probably weaseled his way back into some decent job.
He might have kept his job.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
but now he's.
I think he should be nowhere near the FA, judging by his track record. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of questionable figures of authority. This time last year, we introduced our email subscribers to Stefano Bandecci, who was then the president of Italian Serie B side Ternana. So just give you a bit of a sense of Bandecci as a person. Italian media describes him as a multifaceted right-wing entrepreneur.
Right.
Which
sort of an Italian classic.
Yeah.
Seen plenty of them in our time.
Anyway, last year, Bandecci resigned from his position as Ternana president after a very turbulent afternoon at the office. So his Saturday afternoon began at about sort of 2:45. He was playing the role of this sort of benevolent local businessman, a kind of Willy Wonka-esque figure, handing out gifts to kids with disabilities outside the club stadium. But that benevolence didn't last very long, because by 5:15, he was involved in a furious dispute, furious confrontation with the Ternana fans after a loss against their rival Cittadella, which ended with him spitting in their faces. The crowd was sort of at the front of the stadium, and he was, you know, just in front of the like advertising hoardings, and you just saw him like having this heated argument and then just leaning over and just gobbing into the crowd multiple times. Afterwards, he was asked about it, and he said, "It's true. I spattered the fans, but they spattered me first." He then recorded a message to the fans that said, "You don't deserve shit. Collect your brain or else stop fucking with me, because the bottle you threw at me today, I'll put it back up your ass." He then threatened to knock down the stadium and then resigned.
So he's no longer chairman.
He resigned after that. But the good people of Terni and Umbria are clearly a forgiving sort, because 2 months later, they elected him mayor of Terni, which, frankly, with a temperament like that, he wouldn't have been my choice. But
no.
Fair play to them. I have to say that it went exactly as you would imagine, because 3 months later, he was dragged out of a council meeting after attacking opposition councillors and threatening to knock out their teeth. Somehow, despite this incident, he managed to cling on to his job, but he's now embroiled in another controversy, a sexism row, after some comments that he made in a debate about women's safety, where he said, "A normal man looks at a woman's nice ass and maybe even tries it on with her. Anyone who has never cheated on their girlfriend is not normal." No, he doubled down and then said that all normal Italian men and women understand what he means, but that Italy is full of imbeciles.
Well, so you're either an imbecile or you cheat.
Or you cheat on your partner. I don't know. He sounds like a nice... He's from the Silvio Berlusconi school of politics,
I think. In every respect.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll be getting down to one of Luis Rubiales's parties at some point.
I'm sure he'd love it, yeah. I don't know.
So is he completely uninvolved in football now?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think he's not particularly popular with the Tanana fans, although he is their mayor. Yeah, I don't know.
It is basically impossible to imagine a mayor in the UK doing any of those things.
Yeah.
Or a club owner. Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah. Certainly they might say those things in private.
Yeah. But can you imagine like Jim Ratcliffe spitting in Man United fans' faces and then being elected mayor of Manchester?
And then being like, yeah, I check out arses. Yeah. If you don't cheat, you're not normal.
Yeah. I don't know if he's quite got the idea of, as a politician, wanting to convey this sense of being very trustworthy and responsible.
I mean, it works for Trump.
True.
It's got to be the inspiration.
Yeah.
What town is it?
Terni, yeah. Umbria.
Would be interested to go there and just sort of
soak up the, yeah, what's the vibe on the street like?
Yeah, I don't think I can guess.
Yeah, if you're electing him, yeah, as mayor.
They have voted with their feet.
Yeah.
Keep the seedy and weird chairman coming, if you know of any. Around the world, we like a weird club owner.
Yeah.
Email in, contact at upshot.email.
We'll do a special episode, I think, at some point.
Yeah, because there are many.
Owners, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of hot-headed Mediterranean men, last week we were talking about the pretty mental scenes at Fenerbahce against Trabzonspor in Turkey, where the Trabzonspor fans invaded the pitch at full-time and started attacking players who then fought back, and there were some pretty impressive scraps on the field. Did you see that Fenerbahce fans have now painted a mural in Istanbul of Bright Desai Samuel, one of their players who used to play for QPR as well? It's a mural of him punching a Trabzonspor fan in the face.
Fans on the ground,
and he's like kneeling on top of him, punching him in the face. It's a pretty cool mural. Anyway, the whole of Turkey and the football community was quick to condemn this mindless violence that spilled out after the game. But as a bastion of independent, fair and balanced journalism, we have a duty here at The Upshot to report on both sides of the story. So Hasan Satinkaya, probably pronouncing that wrong, who was the first Trabzonspor fan to enter the field, has given an interview with a Turkish newspaper where he gave his own honest explanation of what happened. So he said, "My aim was simply to tell the players to go to the locker room. I was hit from the side and fell to the ground. Then I was kicked when I was on the ground. I became the real victim." So accompanying that quote, there is a picture of Hasan mid-flow, politely asking the Fenerbahce players to leave the field. So he's standing there in a terrifying Joker mask style, like balaclava, with his like knees bent, fist raised, squaring up to these Fenerbahce players like a sort of UFC fighter.
About to throw a punch.
He's about to politely ask them to vacate the playing field because the game is over and he would like them to make their way to their bus.
There's no need for any of this, guys.
No, guys, come on, just please. We need to put the heat things back on the grass so we can the UV lights back on.
Knife poking out of his pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, no, as defences go, it's about as convincing as the Crystal Palace fan who was kung fu kicked by Eric Cantona. So at Cantona's trial, he was there and he was asked about what happened, and he said that all he'd said to provoke Cantona was, "It's an early bath for you, Mr. Cantona." Which you then see the picture of him like middle fingers at Cantona. Like, yeah. I don't think he was offering an early bath. Yeah.
You're jolly well going home, aren't you?
Yeah.
What did he actually call him? What does Cantona?
He said something like "fuck off, you French bastard," or something like that. Didn't he? I don't think it wasn't anything imaginative. It's an early bath for you, Mister Cantona.
Has anyone ever said that at a football match?
The look on his face
since the 1880s,
picture.
I think.
Luke Littler, the darts prodigy, the 17-year-old, he's getting a bit cocky, I think.
He is, yeah.
I mean, fair enough, he's doing very well. But he, so have you seen, he's flogging replica shirts which start at 90 quid, which, I mean, that's just a standard replica. You can get a framed, signed one for 250 quid. I can't imagine seeing many kids walking around rocking a Luke Littler, but maybe I'm wrong.
It was on my birthday list, yes. But you didn't ask.
you got a brief greeting on the podcast instead of your Luke Littler shirt. Maybe we get one framed here. I've done a 180 on the shirt. Anyway, so he's flogging these shirts, but also he is starting to sort of strut around the hockey like he owns the place. So you might remember that Littler's always said his hero as a youngster was Raymond van Barneveld, who was the sort of god of darts at one point in the noughties. And Littler actually beat him during the World Championship. And van Barneveld said at the time, he didn't really want to talk to me, but, you know, I just thought, like, it's the World Championship. You know, he's obviously very much in the zone. But van Barneveld is now complaining that Luke Littler is repeatedly blanking his supposed hero. So he said, the other day I walked up to him to shake his hand. He took out his earplug for a moment and only said the most necessary thing. So I think he literally probably just went like, you're right, maybe just a nod, right, geese. And Barney wasn't very happy about that. And then he said he's been texting him before matches to say, like, good luck, hope it goes well, and just getting no reply. Mm. And Littler is famously always on his phone. Anyway, he then confronted Littler about it. And apparently Littler said, oh, you sent me a WhatsApp. I don't use WhatsApp. I just use text. Van Barneveld said, I sent him a text, still nothing back. And he told the interviewer, if I've been your inspiration for years, I expect a text message back. Dude's on his phone all day. Fuck off. I mean, it is a bit... Luke Littler is a very laid-back guy. And he's also a teenager. Like, you're basically not going to get a teenager's attention with anything apart from, like, pornography and Call of Duty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a sweating, balding darts legend probably ain't going to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if it... I could slightly see why Van Barneveld is getting pissed off there, like, because he probably just wants to offer some words of support to Littler as well and be like, you know, I've been through what you've been through, like, this is what it takes to stay at the top.
Yeah, and he's just like, yeah. Right, yeah. Not texting him back is a bit weird.
Yeah.
He is always on his phone, famously. Yeah. That's what everyone says. But I don't know, I quite like the cocky thing with Luke Littler. It's a bit like Jude Bellingham. It's like... The arrogance is reassuring and impressive.
Yeah, he's quite sparing with his words, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's also, when he does interviews, it's so unmedia trained. It's just like he's just having a chat. It's just like, probably won't practice. I'll just play Call of Duty. But it is weird to say this guy's your hero and then just boy him off. It also, I think for Barney, it is probably adding to his slight fall of grace complex. Because like I said, he was the man, him and Phil Taylor, back in the noughties, and then he retired around like COVID time. And then he came out of retirement and everyone kind of made it out like it was like, oh, he can't keep away from the hockey. But I actually think a more plausible reason is that he was having a big divorce. So he had to divide up his $3 million fortune for Barney. So he had to get back to work. And actually I was reading into that a bit more, and the tabloids quite unfairly branded him a love rat. Cause I think he'd already broken up with his wife. He asked a fan out for a drink over Instagram. She said no and sold it to the paper instead. And then he did something which is a little bit weird. He sent a married fan was like messaging him, and he sent her a picture, and it was just him lying in bed with her initials written on a notepad, which is kind of romantic, I think, but also a bit odd.
Yeah.
It's not love rat behavior, but yeah, that is the extent of scandal I can find for Van Barneveld.
I like, that's quite a fun insight into the world of darts and flirting.
Yeah, the old initials on the notepad. Maybe we try that to our fans. Do keep messaging in.
So there were a few raised eyebrows back in January when Japanese baseball star Shohei Ohtani signed a $700 million 10-year deal with the LA Dodgers, which at the time, which is the most lucrative contract in the history of sport. So it's all pretty shocking, but it made a lot more sense when you discovered that the brain box behind that deal was none other than Chelsea owner Todd Boehly, who also owns the LA Dodgers, the man who spent $58 million on Mark Cucurella and another $115 million on Moses Caicedo and gave him an 8-year contract. Anyway, Shohei hasn't hit a ball yet, but Todd's money is already disappearing into the seedy LA criminal underworld, which, if you want to know more about LA seedy underworld, then just talk to Hugo Lloris, because he's played a lot of GTA. So a couple of weeks ago, police launched an investigation because there was a $4.5 million payment from Shohei Ohtani's account to a shady illegal betting firm. Just after that news broke, Ohtani's translator and best friend, Ipe Mizuhara, came out and took the rap for it. So he claimed that he'd racked up these huge gambling debts and that his superstar friend had bailed him out. So at this point, you're thinking there's either two things going on here. Either Ohtani's really done his mate a solid and bailed him out and paid off these scary gambling blokes, or, and I have no evidence for this, so please don't sue me, Ohtani, that the translator is covering up for Shohei.
Yeah. He's denying that, right?
He is denying, he never gambled. But there were suspicions.
They're not betting on baseball, are they? I guess there hasn't been any baseball. So. I think they said they were.
Yeah. Anyway, Ohtani has now come out and denied any involvement in this at all. He accused his friend of a massive theft from his account and said, Ipe has been stealing my money from my account and has been telling lies.
So he's throwing him under the bus.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's true.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken 4.5 million from his account. Allegedly.
Yeah. How's he got access to his account? I guess he is his translator.
Yeah. And best friend, maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, with a track record of spunking cash like that, I think Todd Bowley will be lining him up for a job at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. It does feel like it's just another great Todd Bowley master plan foiled.
Yeah.
Instantly.
I mean, what is he on? 700 million.
Yeah. Isn't it quite weird? It's like the contract's 10 years and then he gets most of the money after the 10 years. So maybe there's some.
Okay. So it's basically tying him down. Make it that he can't leave if he wants to get that money.
All I know is when Todd Bowley introduced these like really long contracts at Chelsea, everyone was like genius. And now everyone's like, how the fuck are we going to get rid of these players? They're on 10-year contracts.
Why do we still have to buy Moises Caicedo 250 grand a week for the next 8 years?
Yeah, can be paying that off in the 2030s. Yeah. And it sounds like Ipai will be paying off his 4.5 million in the 2030s. Surely he's going to jail if he did do a massive theft.
Yeah, I mean,
all that guy had to do, by the way, he had it made. He was the best mate and translator. And I think they even like practiced together. Whatever, he was his right-hand man for the best paid sportsman in history. All you've got to do is just fucking ride that horse to your own wealthy retirement. All you got to do is just like, don't wire any money to illegal betting syndicates. Yeah. Don't kill anyone.
Don't get involved in LA seedy underworld.
4.5 million is a lot of money to be gambling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's fucked it.
He has fucked it.
One way or another, whatever happened there, he has fucked it.
I mean, hopefully, if he's somehow able to stay in Ohtani's good books, which, judging by the quotes we've been through, sounds unlikely, then 4.5 million is chump change, really.
True, to Ohtani.
Yeah.
But, like, well, surely he's going to jail. He's done it. I really hope there's a very public trial. That'd be great.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Well done, Todd.
Yeah.
it's harsh to blame him for the whole thing, but
yeah.
That sort of thing does just seem to follow him around. Right. I think that's it for this week, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Thanks a lot for listening and happy birthday, Zach.
Thank you.
Do message in, say happy birthday to Zach. And don't forget to pick up your tickets to the live show, 15th of June. Previewing the biggest wrong-uns in the Euros, plus a few stories too salacious for the pod. Half the tickets have gone already, and the link is in the show description. See you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.